When I worked in the theater, it was primarily with playwrights and directors, moving between the written and the performed text of new plays. And in our conversations, before the play had first made its debut, we often spoke about discovering the through line of the text, or to say it another way, the threads that run through the whole of the story. It's like the play's heartbeat. Once understood, the through line grounded all of us who would touch the play from then on. We could add scene, lighting and costume designers, stage managers, actors, techies of all sorts. We could tweak the text, take out or add whole scenes. And as long as we all had a sense of and a dedication to those through lines and threads, we knew everything would be just fine. Our creative collaboration could flourish within a safe container because we all understood what we were trying to get across. We could all be creators and changers, constructors and deconstructors and reconstructors, because we knew what wouldn't change. In the theater, this kind of clarity is so important because change is constant. You create whole worlds in a few months, reside within them, find yourself in turn changed by them, and then on closing night, you tear them all down. And then you go on to creating the next world. And so theater artists, like all of us, must also discover in themselves their own life's through lines. Theater artists, no, all of us must discover the threads that remain unchanging, even as entire worlds seem to be made, unmade, remade again and again across the course of our lives. Teacher and writer Parker Palmer tells of his attempts at such self-discovery and his appreciation when he found the Quaker saying, "Let your life speak." He decided at first it must mean to, quote, "let the highest truths and values guide you. Let your life speak." And so he says he lined up the loftiest ideals he could find and set out to achieve them, to let his life demonstrate them. But, as he goes on, quote, "the results were rarely admirable and often laughable and sometimes grotesque. But always they were unreal, a distortion of his true self, as must be the case when one lives from the outside in, not the inside out." After many years of discovery, he says he realized that "let your life speak" means something else entirely than he had originally thought, which is that, quote, "before you tell your life what you intend to do with it, listen for what it intends to do with you. Before you tell your life what truths and values you have decided to live up to, let your life tell you what truths you embody, what values you represent. Let your life speak and listen. In your quiet moments, what does your life have to say? What are those urgent questions that bubble up to the surface again and again? The irrepressible hopes. Discovering your through line comes from a willing listening to those things that you cannot help but live if you are to live your own life. Now, as I was thinking about this Sunday after Mark's last Sunday in the pulpit, I thought first about a congregation and community coming to terms with the transient, a community in change. All week, various people stopped in or called and asked when Mark would be in. We had to say, we weren't sure he would be. After 23 years of being able to walk in and find Mark's willing ear, his easy smile or silly songs, we are facing a new reality, a new world. And just as in the theater, what will allow all of us to give of ourselves most freely, allow us to contribute and to stay connected, and build and grow and create this new world together is discovering and articulating our through lines, our threads. This was the challenge and opportunity Theodore Parker faced in 1841 when he preached that sermon at his new colleague's ordination. Religiously, Unitarianism was facing the challenge of transcendentalism, which was a philosophical movement by some of its most progressive ministers and lay leaders, including Parker himself. Transcendentalism criticized Unitarianism for being too intellectual and disconnected from real life. Greatly influenced by German Romanticism, it affirmed individual human capacity to use our intuition to discern a greater or transcendent truth. In contrast to the Unitarianism of the day, which took reason, tradition, and biblical scholarship as its foundations. We hear the influence of transcendentalism and Unitarian Universalism today in our first source, which begins the direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder. In 1841, the United States also faced major cultural changes as well. The abolitionists were increasingly pushing for an end to slavery, and Parker was at the forefront of these anti-slavery efforts. One historian calls him its intellectual leader. Parker was 31 when he wrote and preached this sermon, "The Transient and Permanent in Christianity." At the time, he was a pastor of a small church in Massachusetts. 5 years later, he was called to a new congregation that had been planted specifically in response to his message. By then, he had so upset the mainstream of Unitarianism that he had to preach his own installation sermon. It didn't take long, however, before his reputation spread, and many Sundays he would preach his message of justice and pure religion to several thousand people. They said on a regular Sunday, a couple thousand, but sometimes if he really was, he had a big message that he really wanted to deliver, he could have up to 7,000. Yeah. Also in Massachusetts. It's today called the Theodore Parker Church, but had a different name then. Though many today don't know Parker's name, you likely know his words, which President Obama has quoted and attributed to Martin Luther King Jr., but MLK actually got from Parker. So here's the quote, and you can see in this, I'm going to read it to you, but you'll see in this that it over time, as MLK picked it up and then Obama picked it up, they've each kind of taken their own spin on it, but you'll hear the roots here. "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. But from what I can see, I am sure it bends towards justice." You know it. Parker greeted the gathered community in 1841 with a great sense of change. He was a reformer. He felt the calling of a world transformed. And yet, importantly, what Parker offered his people was not simply what needed to change, but what would remain constant throughout that change. He was not like his fellow transcendentalist, Ralph Waldo Emerson, inspired to leave the Unitarian ministry altogether, but rather to reform it from within. He loved the church. He believed in the church. He wanted the church to continue on, changed, yes, but not dismantled. He envisioned an emboldened church that resisted being enamored with the transient, but instead willingly experimented with all that is temporary so as to better pursue, understand, and experience the constant. With Mark and Vicky's retirement, it is inevitable that many would wonder about what it will mean now to be a member of this congregation. For many, Mark has been their through line. But if it turns out that the minister is in fact transient, then what shall we point to as permanent? I've heard some say, it's the people. I come here for the people. Now, recently, we had a gathering of the elected leadership that will serve for the next 3 years. And in the room, we realized that only 3 or 4 of the over 20 had been leaders in the congregation for more than 5 years. So if those leaders are any indication, the people are not the through line. For people in the church change. We move into different roles, different phases in our lives, into greater and then less, and then greater again activity in the church. So if it isn't the minister, and it's not the people, then what? Well, I have some suggestions, but they are just suggestions. A big part of the interim work in these next 2 years will be about discovering these through lines and claiming them. So just take these as conversation starters for your consideration. I offer them now because they are things that I've heard said about Mark that cause some fear and grief that because he's leaving, we are losing these things. And I offer them because my sense is that we're actually not losing them at all. Because Mark's presence with us over these 23 years, a whole generation, has taught us well these qualities and ideas, and now it's just our job to keep them going. It's our job to demonstrate and live out how we've been permanently changed by his ministry. To recognize that though his literal presence is not permanent, our impact on one another and the ways we've grown together can be. So here they are. The first one, I don't know how Mark's going to feel when he hears that this is the first suggestion I offer of his permanent impact on the congregation, but here it is. In this church, it's okay to be imperfect. It's okay to forget stuff. It's okay to say the wrong thing and then apologize. It's okay to start again. You can see if and when he hears about it. We'll see what he thinks. But I hope he knows what a gift it is. That I got to see him sometimes struggle to light the chalice. That his microphone too often malfunctioned. That he couldn't seem to stick to his agreed-upon time limits. That he would sometimes stumble over his words or get lost in the order of service. These are all a gift that says it's okay to be human here. That, in fact, this is what we're all about. Bring your whole human self. Mark has offered us his common humanity without ego and instead with laughter, a sparkle in his eye, and an overall gracious spirit, and this puts us all at ease. My friends, let's continue this. I know other congregations who are obsessed with perfection. I confess I have my own perfectionist tendencies. But in truth, none of us are perfect, and trying to keep up that illusion is exhausting and soul-sucking. So let's not do that. Let's keep laughing together and making mistakes, forgiving each other, and helping each other figure out how to move forward. Number two. Speaking of laughter, I can't tell you how many people have asked me if the interim minister will have the same sense of humor that Mark has. So let's just get this out of the way right now. The answer is no. No one has the same sense of humor as Mark. No one can pull off the combination of irreverence and reverence in the same way that Mark can. No one, except this congregation. I think I've confessed before, I'll confess again, I can be a little serious, maybe you've noticed, but I like to laugh, I like to play, and I love that this is a congregation that considers joy a core value. So let's consider this a permanent truth about us too. We should be taking our work, but not ourselves, too seriously. And when we start to confuse this, when I start to confuse these things, help me out. Pull out the blue wigs and the silly song lyrics, the crazy hats and the bad jokes, and help us all stay true to this very important through line. Number three, my last suggestion. This is a congregation that is both trustworthy and trusting. You have a big idea? Have sufficient support to carry it forward? Have a plan for how to do it? Go for it. We trust you. That's how we ended up with our Faith Family Hospitality Program, our ESL tutoring, our stewardship committee. I'm thinking the brotherhood and the sisterhood and the new mother's daughters group. And I started to think maybe the congregation as a whole could put in this category. Mark trusts people, and his trusting attitude has in turn fostered a greater trustworthiness. During this past year, in a time of a lot of change, this has been the most important through line for me. Trust the congregation. They are worthy of your trust. You are. We are. There are many more through lines and threads for us to discover in these coming years, but these three, embracing imperfection, laughter, and trust, so well embodied by Mark and his ministry, are especially important to name and claim right now. Else we imagine that somehow these two are transient rather than permanent, and imagine these qualities retire when Mark retires. But they don't need to. We get to decide. When I selected the photo for the order of service today, I was counting on the fact that many of you likely have been following Neil deGrasse Tyson's update of Carl Sagan's Cosmos. And even if you aren't in that camp, maybe you still remember the original version. Right? So in either case, you might recognize the photo as the image of the cosmic calendar that they both present. Okay, so just if you can see, there's words on there. You can't see the January one, but as you go through, you can see the other ones. So this is as if the whole of the universe, the whole cosmic history, was mapped onto a single earthly annual calendar. This is what it would look like. So at the start, you got the Big Bang. And in March, our galaxy formed. In August, our sun. In September, the oldest rocks on Earth. Late September, the first life on Earth. But humans, looking pretty much like we do now, we don't arrive until December 31st at 11:52 p.m. And recorded human history is pretty much the last 11 seconds of the year. In Parker's time, when he tried to answer the question, what is permanent, he could say God, and his community knew what he meant. But here today, answering this question, it's complicated by our theological diversity and our 21st century scientific and cultural awareness. So is anything permanent or eternal today? I mean, we're a blip. My life, your life, we're such a teeny tiny little transient blip. The Earth, blip. Even our solar system, blip. And this larger thing, this universe, is far greater than anything we can understand. It existed long, long before us, and it will, in one form or another, exist after us. And mostly, the large majority of it is an incredible mystery that we can't even begin to comprehend. And we are, as the song goes, just fellow passengers along for the ride, held by this great and mysterious ocean. From stardust we came, to stardust we shall return. And yet somehow, this little blip that I am, and this little blip that you are, and the stuff we do together has some kind of lasting impact on this larger whole. Somehow we matter. Somehow everything matters because it is all connected. There is a through line. This is how one little chunk of 23 years can live on long after those 23 years have passed. And all this, by the way, sounds an awful lot like the way that the ancients used to describe God. Parker says, in the old days, men groped for the wall, but stumbled and fell because they trusted a transient notion, not an eternal truth. In these times of change, in our individual lives, and as a religious community, let us go in search of the permanent and put our trust there. We'll be fine.